Answer your question.
No questions.
No, I have the
what?
Pre-approved question.
Pre-approved question.
So there's a lot of answers.
There's recent fact that Rebbe Matthew does 16 handles.
Oh yeah, 16 handles is okay.
All right.
Breaking news. On of your mask. Have to know, is the suda having a place to suda?
Yeah.
You have to go quick. You have to go there before.
We'll start with like five. There's five pre-submitted questions, and then we will open it up to anyone who asks them if they want, and then we'll end to go to the Suda at 12. We'll dance there. Just kidding. Okay. First question. Do the Rosh Yeshiva feel the Yeshiva talks enough about Eretz Yisrael throughout the year? Is there anything the Rosh Yeshiva would suggest that we as a yeshiva can do to try and make sure that Eretz Yisrael is consistently on our minds? Is there anything that we as individuals should be doing to try and ensure that we're consistently thinking about Eretz Yisrael?
I think this yeshiva does more than most other yeshivas in America as far as having a consciousness of Eretz Yisrael. What else can we do?
We daven three times a day, do we not? A person davens with kavanah, how can he not be thinking about Eretz Yisrael? It's right there, front and center. So focus more on your tefillah. That's you don't have to do extra things. It's right there.
Oh, I guess people can ask follow-ups. They ask on each question if they want.
Years ago, we used to have rabbanim from Eretz more common. The rabbanim, rebbis from Eretz would come give a public shiur. We just had the chief rabbi came.
Right.
But years ago, we used to have more of you know. I think so.
The main connection, let's be honest, the main connection we have in Eretz Yisrael is that in this room, a lot of people in the room, who in this room has not learned a year in Eretz Yisrael? Raise your hand. One or two guys, they're too young, but go Mr. Shum. We all, that's our connection to Eretz Yisrael. We all learned it. You know, that's, I know I learned it.
I didn't raise my hand.
No,
I didn't learn that. The system wasn't
in place. It wasn't in place when I came. It's true. Almost no one went. I'm a bit younger, so I did go. Not everyone's gone. Most people in my age did not go. Most people did not go. But as the years went on, it became a style. And when I was a college student here, so attending your college catalog. Yeshiva College catalog. There's such a thing called the Junior Year Abroad. It was a thing in all college, Junior Year Abroad. They give examples. You can go to Oxford or you can go to Hebrew University. But I went to Karen Biavne. And they gave us some credits. The credits always changed. But that was, I was there only for 1 year. But as they use the word today, it was a transformative year. It changed so many things the way I think. Completely different because the 1 year I spent in Karen Biavne. By the time my children, who went to this yeshiva, grew up, they went to Karen Biavne with almost all their, other yeshivas, almost all of their contemporaries. But that wasn't the junior year abroad, it was right after high school. Everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael. That's how we have a tremendous connection, because in our yeshivas, you see, everyone already learned in Eretz Yisrael. Once you establish that strong connection, I'm sure that all of you, when you were there, as I did over 50 years ago, had somebody come to you and say, "You're not allowed to go back. You have to stay here." I remember getting the Musa Shmuz. How could you go back? You have a chuyuv to say in Eretz Yisrael. It's a din at the mitzvah d'oraisa. I think that's one of the next questions. The Ramban had a quick peek just now. The Ramban has a Ramban in Chumash and a Ramban in Sefer Mitzvah. Says a chuyuv d'oraisa. You're not allowed to go back. Just stay here. Am I right? You got such a shmuz with somebody? I remember it. Okay, I'll let you answer the questions. I don't want to anticipate. Right.
Okay. Have the Rosh Yeshiva ever considered make aliyah? If yes, why did the Rosh Yeshiva ultimately decide not to?
Rabbi Shmuel were in Eretz Yisrael. And then they left because they felt that there was Amaratzis in Bavel. They felt obligated to establish yeshivas there. That everyone is mechuyev to go live in Eretz. So if you need in the Chutz La'aretz, you have to stay in Chutz La'aretz. Perhaps a Lechik goes to the same public. Anyone who's in Rabbanus or in Chinuch is not allowed to leave to go to Eretz Yisrael. And he used to say, Aloshin is like the captain of the ship, is not allowed to leave when there's a sakana until all the passengers are taken care of. And the general in the army is not allowed to leave until all the soldiers are taken care of. So the Rabbanim Achroi and the communities in Chutz La'aretz, they prevent intermarriage and assimilation and so on. So I used to, in my heart, I used to laugh when he would say this. What do you mean? The rabbi's like the captain of the ship and the general. What kind of a marshal is that? Then I found years later, there's a tshuva in the Maram Shik where he has exactly that lashon. He had a Talmud. The Maram Shik lived at the beginning of the Reform movement. He was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. And one of his Talmidim was in the rabbinate in Hungary and he was fighting Reform. They were all fighting reform, and he didn't enjoy it. He was successful, but he didn't enjoy it. So he was offered a rabbanus in Eretz Yisrael in the middle of the late 1800s. He was offered a rabbanus in Eretz Yisrael. He should move to Eretz Yisrael, sit and learn, and give shiurim and paskin shilas. So he packed all of his bags, and he was going to move to Eretz Yisrael. And then he sent a letter to his rebbe, to the Maram Shik, to ask for a bracha on the move. So he writes him back, I can't give you a bracha. You're doing shaloi kedin. He said, when you learned in the yeshiva, other boys went into business. They didn't all go into the rabbinate. We had the right to draft you into the army. But you volunteered to be a general in the army, to fight assimilation and intermarriage, and to fight reform. So he said, the general is not allowed, even the captain of the ship, the whole Lashon. And that's the Lashon, that's the tshuva of the Maram Shik. That's what the Rav Chaim Oizer quoted when Rav Kook was the chief rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. So he corresponded with Rav Chaim Oizer, he should move to Eretz Yisrael. So he had an apartment for him, and he had a salary, and he had a title. Rav Kook was going to be the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Chaim Oizer was going to be Reish Kopeni Agoyim. Rav Chaim Oizer was going to move, and then the last minute he backed out, and he sends him a letter, I can't go, because the Rabbanim in Vilna say that I'm still needed there. So a lot of us fool ourselves into believing that the yeshiva is going to collapse if we leave. Yeshiva is not going to collapse. Jewry in America is not going to collapse. But we certainly are doing work. We're certainly helping out a little bit. So that's what the pashtus is, that not everyone is supposed to go move to Eretz Yisrael. I remember the first time I met Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, I was in Eretz Yisrael for the summer. I was giving shiurim in the yeshiva in Kiryat Arba. Yeshivat Nir, Mr. Nir from Mexico gave money, so the yeshiva is called Yeshivat Nir. So someone told me that tomorrow the Rabbinical Council of America is having a one-day conference in Eretz Yisrael's Kedai, I should go. So I went with my whole family. We stuck a very lovely, the whole day conference was very nice. We went to different places. So Rabbi Avraham Shapiro was just then appointed chief rabbi. That was a while ago. That was within 6 months, I think, of his being appointed chief rabbi. So we went, I think it was in Heichal Shlomo, if I'm not mistaken. So we went there and he was speaking to the rabbinical council as we were leaving the room. So they were introducing all the different people to him. So when I passed by, so I said, this is Rabbi Herschel Shechter. So he said, oh, Shalom Aleichem. So then I thought he misunderstood. There was another Rabbi Herschel Shechter, Rabbi J.J. Shechter's father, who was the chaplain of the American Army in the Second World War. He was the one who liberated Rabbi Lau as a little child from the DP camps there, from the concentration camps. So he's much older than me. He just passed away 2 years ago. So I said, not the one who says, no, he knows which one. He read the Divrei Torah mine. So then 2 days later, I got a phone call from one of his Talmidim that he wants to pick me up. I should come with my family to visit by him. So he visited. So he gave me a whole sales pitch for 25 minutes that I should come to Eretz Yisrael. And they need people like me. They have enough Baruch HaRoah, but they need people to give shiurim like this. And he says he has money, he has access to money, he can get me a position in a yeshiva in a kollel, he can create a new yeshiva, whatever I want, I should come to Eretz Yisrael. After the 25 minutes, the sales pitch, and then he asked me, what else do I do aside from giving shiurim in Yeshiva University? So I said every month, every week, at that time I gave two weekly shiur. One weekly shiur in Queens, that's still going on, that's over 40 years. Another weekly shiur, I think, was in Rabbi Lukstein Shul at that time. So yes, how many people attend this year, how many people attend that year? Then I say once every couple of weeks I give a shiur here, how many people attend, how many people? Then he says, you're not allowed to come there. He says, if you have influence on so many people that come to hear you, sure, you're not allowed to come there. Yeah, I think I would be happier if I would go there. So we wouldn't have we have different headaches there, but I wouldn't have the headaches that we have in America. America is a different kind of problem. But we have to stay here. Stomach, we have to stay here. Every couple of years there used to be rumors. Now they don't have the rumors. Every couple of years there's another rumor that Shechter is gone to Eretz Yisrael. So one year there were three rumors. I was going to three different places. All three were not true. I wasn't going anywhere.
Obviously, what to say after whatever Shechter said, what he said. I speak in general terms. I know some of the questions that a person has to make a decision initially where we should be. But once he's doing something, it's difficult to abandon the position that you have unless you have, one could say, given the analogy, that as a captain, as a general, if he finds someone who is his equal, who can replace him as a captain and as a general, then okay, so someone else will become the captain of the general and he can do what he wants to do. But not in every situation does that exist. Moreover, the question would be, as you just heard, what will the influence of the person be in Eretz Yisrael? I will not mention the name. One of the very outstanding Mabitze Torah of our community, who was my classmate of my son, that generation, so he kept wanting to go to Eretz Yisrael. And I told him, you can't go. Because he was not only with the Rebbe here, he had a shul, he was a very important, in two different capacities that you're going to go to become a Rebbe and yeshiva there, but you're missing half of your hashpah, will not exist. After a few years, kind of speak Rebbe, I have an opportunity to become not only a Rebbe and yeshiva, but a Rav and a shul too. So, go. And the yeshiva did not collapse without him. The shul did not collapse without him. But he was doing those two things. But by contrast, I know other people who were doing important work in chinuch in our community, and they had this burning desire to move to Eretz Yisrael. They moved to Eretz Yisrael. The person who replaced them was not at all of the same type, and there has been a lot of negativity because of that. So if you would have asked me, I would have told me not to let it go. Didn't ask. As far as I'm personally concerned, it is a famous story. I'm not going to take too much time with the famous story, but it's a famous story that when I was a very young man, I was in the Kollel, I was a part-time Rebbe, and I was corresponding with the late Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, who had gone to Eretz Yisrael 2 years before, and I was in the Kollel for 3 years with him, and we were close. And he was offering me a position in his yeshiva. It went as far, I was in Eretz Yisrael for my sister's wedding at the time, so he come say a shiur l'dugma, so I went to say a shiur l'dugma in Har Etzion, which is a small yeshiva at the time, this is 1973, and apparently they liked Mashiach, Amital Zechor liked the shiur, said, if you want, you can come, and then Moshko, I don't know Moshko, said, you want, you can live over here, and I said, I was still very young, but I didn't have a full position here at the time, and it was very strong consideration. I came back, I was in there to go for my sister's wedding, I came back 2 weeks later, my wife said, you got to call for Rabbi Chalap. Call him back. I call him back, he says, I want to appoint you as a Rebbe in our yeshiva. That was a time when he hadn't been a Rebbe for a number of years, and he appointed Rabbi Reichman Shalita, and Rabbi Brunschbill Shalita, and myself in one shot. He wanted to make a real knack, or a Chalapian coup. And for me, all of a sudden, I had no jobs. I had two jobs. It was really for those. It was a very harrowing weeks. There's so many cheshbonos. These life decisions are so difficult. I hope I made the right decision to stay here. You know, you'll never know the road not taken. You know, that's always difficult in life. But once I was here and I was established and I became a rav in the shul as well, they offered me all kinds of jobs. So I turned them down flat. I said, I can't leave as per the words of Rav Shechter Shalit.
Any follow-up questions? Where should we move to?
My age, I can't hear so well. What did he say?
Where should we move to in Eretz Yisrael if we're moving?
If you move to Eretz Yisrael, you should move to a place where you'll have a klita tova. You will be absorbed properly into the society. That it depends on who you are. You can't give the same answer to many people in the room. It could be a different answer to every single person. You know, I have a number of children in Eretz Yisrael. Shechter Shlita has a number of children. In my case, three of them live in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Rabbi Rachman has how many Ramat Beit Shemesh? Four. He outdid me, Baruch Hashem. Kina, sorry, from Tara V'Chochma. I have a fourth in Yerushalayim. Oh, I saved it. He beats me again. The Freros. And Beshech has children all over Eretz Yisrael. He has in the Golan. All right, that's one. Where else are they?
Rehovot.
Rehovot.
And we're all Americans.
Ranan. So between the three families, you have the Rebbe's. We have, Baruch Hashem, a lot of representation in Eretz Yisrael. And I can't speak for them. I didn't preach Zionism. I wasn't that type. You know, preach. If I'm not there myself, I can't preach what I don't practice. But they absorbed. They absorbed from the house a tremendous keshet Eretz Yisrael. And when they went, we never objected. Chas v'chalila. And I think that probably the Rebbe's here are all supporting their children in some way or another living in the Holy Land. We've considered it our chelik and yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And we should all be zocha that either you should move there or your children should move there, because that's where the future of Am Yisrael is.
Any other follow-ups? Okay. I have a follow-up. I'm just curious, like Rebbe mentioned that there'd be different challenges to be working in Eretz Yisrael. Like, what are the things that you feel like you were in Eretz Yisrael? Like, we're aware of what you guys combat for you. But like in Eretz Yisrael, what are the things you feel like you'd be like really working against specifically? Like things that you really feel that you'd like make it be taking stances against?
The politics in Eretz Yisrael are so complicated, no one understands it. If I would go to Eretz Yisrael, I think it would take me 50 years to figure out what's going on. So I would have to avoid taking a stand on every single political issue. I wouldn't understand that.
I would say as follows. Recently, there was a cover story of one of the prominent magazines about Ramat Beit Shemesh entitled The Anglo Bubble. And those of you who have been there, I'm sure there's a lot of Americans there. And they argue back and forth. Is it healthy? Is it unhealthy? Is it sustainable? Is it not sustainable? But I think that's something we have over here, that's certainly in our yeshiva, broader part of our segment of society, is some kind of a balance. There's less polarization. People can do things. They can be students in university and still be really B'nai Torah in the full sense of the word. That's hard to find in Eretz Yisrael. Almost impossible to find in Eretz Yisrael. For example, just to give one example, Baruch Hashem, after our yeshiva, so many people who have gone on to become frum doctors, the Mekadoshim Shemaim, it's a meridik thing. Meridik. In Eretz Yisrael, it's very difficult to find someone who was grew up in a full 100% society of this nature who became a doctor. No. The only way to do it, you go to a Hezer Yeshiva. And the Hezer Yeshiva is somehow looked down upon. In this country, you can go not only to our yeshiva, you can go to even what we call, quote, more Haredi yeshivas, and still be able to become a doctor. It's possible. There, as you know, now there's new efforts to bring the Haredi brain power into the mainstream, obviously, which is a beautiful thing. First they started with the women, then now they're parts of Talmud Torah, then on army issues, now they're starting with the men, do different types, different ways, Machon Lev, and then other different ways. They're trying to create that kind of a model. One of my sons in Eretz Yisrael is involved in a mesifta, where they're trying to do exactly that. Along the lines of the Marava. Marava is famous, that's already for many years. But to have, be able to have a solid high school education in secular studies, at the same time be yeshiva, and even what you might call, quote, yeshivish, to some extent. And of course, they met with opposition. They were paskvilin against him. I said, you made it. Paskvilin against you. So, we'd like to do these kinds of things in Eretz Yisrael, but that's very difficult because there's so many minefields that have to be overcome. But that is a positive influence of Americans, at least from our part of the world, in Eretz Yisrael. It's a kind of a moderating factor. They're able to combine things and to live and let live to a greater extent than the Israelis, the native Israelis. They're born with the us against them mentality. We're brought up more with a live and let live mentality. That would be a good contribution to it. Yeah.
What
were
the factors of staying here versus in
Israel?
Who was initially making that decision?
Those were difficult. There were so many cheshbonos. They're mostly personal in nature. It wouldn't affect other people.
Okay. Both Rim mentioned about like not making Aliyah because you could be impactful in America, but when you're like just graduating college, so it's more difficult to determine whether you're going to have an impact in America in the future. So how do you know? How do you try and assess like the question says, would it be guided to say that I know for sure that I'll have an impact many years down the line?
In part, of course, it depends upon, as we heard before, one's line of work. If one is going to be in computers, or in now even in business, where you can get people doing very nicely, high tech. So it seems to me that a person should lean towards Eretz Yisrael because, you know, not having such a tremendous impact on the community at large if you're in high tech or in computers or things of this nature. Of course, you have to consider the most important consideration of all, which is establishing a proper family. Some of us read Rabbi Lapiansky's letter that came out last year, reissued it this year, about the great obligation of every parent to do his best or her best that the children should be from. And unfortunately, in certain parts of society, the percentage is not as high as in others. And one has to be careful, chas v'shalom, that the aliyah should not lead to chalila v'chalila, a yirida ruchanit. And there are cases, without mentioning names of particular communities, people who moved from I'll say a Wayu community. There are only two of them, Teaneck and the Five Towns. You know? So they move from one of those communities and you move to other parts of Eretz Yisrael, which people think are the equivalent. It's not quite the equivalent. Because in those communities I just mentioned here, you have so many Choshev or Rabbanim, many of whom are Rebbeim and Ayeshiva, and many others. Whereas you go to another place, you think it's the same thing, but it's really not. There aren't that many real Mekoma Satorah. And unfortunately, there's an attrition rate. I'm sad to say it, but this has been printed. I'm not saying anything which is not in print many times over. That in the what they call today the Dati Lumi community at large, it's a significant percentage of those. I don't want to start crying. That the kids are not from. They're just not Shomer Shabbos. I know it firsthand. It's very painful to say. So that's the most important consideration. And that's where that's what I said before, the difficulty of combining things. being in both worlds is difficult. In Eretz Yisrael, the army is always a focal point, because either you're in or you're out. And if you're in, and if you're not in the Hezder, the attrition rate there is very significant, unfortunately. That's why I have children in Eretz Yisrael. They grew up in my house. We're not against the army as a matter of principle, chas v'chalila. But they tell me, l'maisa, we can't do it. L'maisa, it's you're taking too much of a chance. You send your kid to the army, it's just like this. The percentages are just too risky. It's a very sad thing to say. But you have to, their eyes are open. They're not, but their eyes are open. Putting that aside. But so if you're a computer or high tech, you know, live in Eretz Yisrael, you'll establish yourself in a community which is strong, where there's important rabbanim and important peers who will keep your children to be shomer mitzvahs, I think that certainly should be a priority. Again, if you could do it. If you're in the field of chinuch and rabbanis, it's a much more difficult decision. As we heard before, not that we need the general stay, but you need to make new generals. You get them to become the tiyashim. So, in my house, the kids are, we joke, all in the family business. And so half of them about went to Eretz Yisrael, and half of them are here. And they're all finding their places where they're having, Baruch Hashem, hope, positive impact. Two of them are actually teaching in this very institution, and they're doing other important things. And others are doing important things in the Holy Land. And they chose what they chose. It's a personal decision to have to be made. But again, what your career choice is affects, to a large measure, how you answer your question.
Okay. Any follow-up questions?
Sir.
Well, we mentioned establishing a family. How should the desire of parents as well factor into dating? And if you find a girl that's right, but she's not on the same page as you, how do you approach that?
That's a very serious question. I've always told people when they ask me, don't make preconditions in dating, whatever they may be. The preconditions often, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes a laughing stock out of you. I've told them and said, the girl has to have a college degree. No, has to have a college degree. He went to Columbia. He ended up marrying a girl who never went to college. Then I had a guy who was a more yeshivish. No way if she went to Mechlala. No way if she went to Mechlala. Of course, he married a girl who went to Mechlala. I mean, I'm just giving examples. Don't make preconditions about Aliyah either. Only if she wants Aliyah. Only if she doesn't want Aliyah. Yeah. Meet the girl. She meets you. And if it's right, you work it out. I wouldn't make any preconditions. But if you really feel so strongly, and the other side won't do your thing, either to go or not to go, so you have to break it up. But don't make preconditions. That's what I would say.
There are boys in their 40s who are still not married because they had preconditions.
Right. That's right.
It's ridiculous.
Any other follow-up questions?
In the world of anti-Semitism, how should we feel safe, even in America?
Oh, that's a very serious question, Zach. Anti-Semitism is rampant in America.
I was just being sure last night for your life and your services, and it struck me. And I'm like, oh my God, it really is happening in America. There was a security guard there with a gun, and I'm like, oh my God, this is really happening in America. So, if we don't, should we move to Eretz Yisrael? Like, what is Hashem's message to us?
That's the message? Okay.
My belief is at the present time that if statistically, as sad as it is to say, statistically, it's still safer for a Jew to be in America than in Eretz Yisrael, from the perspective of the anti-Semites. I'm saying at the present time. I'm talking now. Yom Atzvot. Yom Atzvot. Tovshin Ayin Tes. Of course, we can't predict the future. I'll tell you a story. In 1975, I was a young rabbi in Riverdale, and there was a man named Meir Kahana who came to the community. I didn't invite him, but he came, and it was a request to speak at Shalosh Shudas. My Shudas, okay. And he said like this, quoted a passage from the Megillah, because it was Purim time, as Vayir Shusha Navocha. He doesn't understand Navocha. Should have said, there was a gzera to kill every single Jew. The Navocha means confused. What does it mean? What's that to be confused about? Should have said, Avela, Tseva, whatever. Urea, what kind of Navocha? He said, because people don't see what's in front of their noses. And that's what happened in Europe before the World War II. And therefore, guys, leave now. All right? That was 44 years ago. Okay. Now, if everyone would have listened to him, we'd have all left 44 years ago. Maybe it would have been better. I don't know. But we're still here, 44 years later. And I repeat what I said before. Statistically, at the present time, it's still safer to be an American Jew than to be living in Eretz Yisrael. I have a granddaughter. She is a student in a seminary in a place called Ofakim. And I called. I said, "Where is she?" "Oh, she's home." "Where was she on Shabbos?" "She was in Ofakim." "So what happened?" "Well, you know, Ofakim is in the south, for those who don't know. And came Motzei Shabbos, rockets started flying. They were told to just lie on the floor. There was unfortunately not such a mamad or a miklat. It was the safest place." And what happened? "Then they sent us home." "How'd you get home?" "An Eged bus." "How'd that Eged bus go?" "It was a regular way through Kiryat Gat from to remember." So that means that they were in harm's. She was in harm's way. And we have so many of our brothers and sisters who are living in harm's way. Four of them gave up their lives. Civilians. You will know. I'm not telling you what you don't know. This is less. The news is less than a week old. So if you're running away from New York now with the security guards, Marshall also had a security guard this past Shabbos, and they also threw me off. Seeing they had an off-duty cop with a gun. It stirred me. But if the Balabatan felt, because of the second, Trezim, they have a Chazaka, a second attack the week before, they felt it was a necessary precaution. I can't be a rabbi and say, "No, you don't need it," whatever, I'm going to that now. But sure, there's anti-Semitism. And of course, ultimately, I don't want to speak in front of Rav Shechta Shlita, but I'll just say something which I've said in the past, not in his presence, so I guess I'll repeat it. If he disagrees, he can tell me. That we should be all leaving on the grounds that of the famous Mishnah Chochma in Parshas B'chukosai, read it soon, that he goes through Jewish history. Every Golus, the Jews established themselves when they became too comfortable in their established quarters. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a storm and threw them out. And this is written 100 years ago. He was in Nifter almost 100 years ago. And he gives us an example, his words, famous, Yachshivu she Berlin hi Yerushalayim. As it's been quoted, is in fact kind of a prediction of the terrible Holocaust which ensued. So that means there's going to be something like that over here in America too. So when people asked for that, I said, "Yeah, we care for it, we don't know the future." But the only thing that gives us a little bit of comfort that maybe won't happen is that Chaim Volozhiner is quoted, who passed away 200 years ago, that America is going to be the last Golos. At no time was a Nevuah. There were no Jews in America at the time to speak of. He somehow prophesied America going to be the last Golos. Once it's going to be the last Golos, we don't know. It's going to end Chalila V'chas in another tragedy, Gog and Magog, who knows what. Or Mashiach's going to come and pluck us up right from here, right now. Hayom HaMikol Dishmo, as soon as we walk out. The second, Mashiach can come and take us all to Eretz Yisrael without a disaster, because if it's the last Golos, we don't know how it's going to end. So that's what I tell some people. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that potential argument. So you should go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm not saying no, but don't go because you're afraid of the end of him, Khalil harm you over here. There's a greater danger there. You should go anyway. I'm saying no, but that should not be the question right now. I'm speaking for this minute. Things can change. It can happen here. We don't know. But for the present, that's what I would say. Better hurry up to finish the question.
It's fine. I mean, I have to finish them.
Okay, do you want to finish them?
No,
Okay. I don't know, actually, I don't know, follow-up questions. The for those of us who don't naturally feel spiritually connected to Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, how important is it to take efforts to make ourselves feel more connected and appreciate having the land? Do the Rosh Yeshiva have any advice for how to practically go about doing that? Should significant time be devoted to such an endeavor?
Spend the summer in Eretz Yisrael. You fall in love with the country. Everybody falls in love. Well, the people that go on
Birthright,
they all fall in love. There was one girl who had a Jewish family name. She wasn't Jewish. And by mistake, they took her on Birthright. She fell in love with Judaism. She converted. Everyone who goes to Eretz Yisrael falls in love with Eretz Yisrael. I was a shaykh otherwise. There's a woman who's a professor in Scranton University of Comparative Religions, I think. So she and her husband, she wrote a whole book. So she writes them. She and her husband got engaged, and they had to decide where they're going to live. So neither of them had a job. So they made up whoever gets a job first, they're going to move to that city. So she got a job teaching comparative religion in the university in Scranton. So her husband went along, he got a job later. So she didn't know the neighborhood, so they bought a home. They had to buy a home. Put a home in the middle of the area where the colonel lives. So then, one of the professors in the school, Mark Shapiro, teacher, he encouraged all of them to go for a tour at Eretz Yisrael. She felt all the Goyish professors fell in love with Eretz Yisrael. They're Goyim, but the Jews for sure will fall in love with them. So they go there for a couple of weeks before everyone falls in love with Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, and the last question, unless there's any follow-up questions. The last question is, how should we view anti-Israel views by various sects of Judaism?
Then we should go. Okay. Mamish lunatics. There was one fellow who went to high school here, so he joined the Turikat. His parents lived in the neighborhood. And the people from the Embroiders, the people from Embroiders warned the parents, don't send him to YU, he'll get ruined. So they sent him to YU and he joined the Turi Karta. He got ruined. And we're gonna. So they had, he always brags about the fact when they had the talks in Madrid, when was that? 15 years ago, 20 years ago. He was the spokesman for the Turi Karta. He learned English in MTA, so he knew how to speak English better than the others. They were all crazy, they were all lunatics. There's no one to talk to over there. Turikarta used to take out a full-page ad in the New York Times every year when it was time for the Israeli parade. Now they can't afford it, so they have a much smaller ad. But there's nobody there at Turikarta. Nobody there. The whole organization, 4.5 people, the whole thing. Take out such a big ad, you would think they are there, how many people there are. Then they have these protest rallies. So they told me if you walk over to the people, you see that they're not Jewish. They're Mexicans. They don't speak English. They speak Spanish. The Mexicans, they put on a beard and a payas on them. They're b'chalam not Jewish. They pay people to stand online to protest the Israeli parade if they're all Jewish people. They're not Jewish b'chalam. They're lunatics, a bunch of mishugot.
What about Satmar? What about Satmar?
I'm talking about Satmar. Satmar's not in the Turi Karta, but also the Satmar, they have such respect for their Rebbe, they're embarrassed to say the Rebbe made a mistake. The Rebbe made a mistake, unfortunately. The Rebbe thought that this Hakamas Hamdina is going to destroy Judaism. That's what they intended. The secular founders of the Medina so wanted to establish a Medina to replace the religion, but they didn't succeed. And everything is growing. There's more learning than they ever had before, and there's more learning in the whole world because of the Hakamas Hamdina. There's more Shira Shmiras HaMitzvahs than there ever was before. It's not less. They have such respect. They keep on perpetuating the mistake of the Rebbe. Keep on saying anti-Medina, the whole thing is a joke. The same thing, Rav Avila Soloveitchik at the time also thought the Medina is going to destroy everything. But now they keep on printing over, it's an embarrassment to Rav Avila that they print over all the things that he said. All of his predictions were wrong, everything was wrong, same with the Satmar Rebbe. So it's an embarrassment, they have the swarm downstairs, they quote Rav Avila Soloveitchik and others. Well, you're quoting it now. 70 years after the Medina was established, you see all the chashashas were incorrect. Everything is stronger than it ever was.
I'm not sure that was the question. I thought they were talking about the Reform Jews.
Go for it.
Repeat the question.
Yeah,
how should... I don't know.
Say the words.
How should we view anti-Israel views by various sects of Judaism?
Okay. So I thought you meant that. That's in a way a more serious problem, because if Rav Schechter is correct that these two accounts are a very small number, what I want to talk about is a much bigger number, much bigger number. It's part of the unfortunate, how should we say it, the vanishing American Jew, that he's a Jew in the sense that he is descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Although he may not be Jewish, because of the intermarriage now in those groups is now, could be 60-70% or even higher in certain parts of them, which is a pachat b'chodim, and half of them are Jews, half are not Jews, depending on where the intermarriage goes. And they have come very violently anti-Israel. Part of the whole general liberal, leftist theme. Unfortunately, too many Jews are in that's really dangerous, because on a natural level, a supernatural level is a different story. On a natural level, American support is very important for the state of Israel, and there was a certain quote-unquote Jewish vote that was important, and that had a certain amount of influence, and now the numbers are shrinking. The Orthodox numbers are mushrooming, they're growing exponentially. But we started off very, very small, and now we're getting significantly bigger. But the big block over there, who we'll call Reform, Conservative, and Unaffiliated, they used to be very pro-Israel. They were culturally Jewish, and at the beginning of the state of Israel, they were all in-married, very little intermarriage the first decade after Israel was established. As intermarriage started to get much greater, and the Reform and Conservative movements are becoming weaker, and their connection to their synagogues and temples are much weaker, and people just become more and more unaffiliated, and therefore less attached to anything Jewish. And now that the left-wing BDS and all that kind of stuff, and anti-Israel, and you know what I'm talking about, because stronger with the general American left-wing society, and the Jews, Jews always voted Democratic, so the Democrats are talking that kind of language now, and they're going along. They used to be, even within that party, they were always pro-Israel. That was an exception to the Democratic agenda. Now, unfortunately, not. I thought that was the question. That's a very serious question. We have to daven that these people should wake up and realize that they're making the mistake that Jews made we spoke about a little bit earlier, thinking they're Americans and not Jews. I'm not going to help them, unfortunately, if such a thing should come to pass. And therefore, what we can do about that is trying to establish any kind of Jewish connection with any Jew that we meet. You meet Jews at your workplace. The guy is reformed, conservative, unaffiliated. Not just to be a kiruv. He wants ultimately love that should become a shomer mitzvahs. Even if they're not shomer mitzvahs, they should marry Jewish. They should think Jewish. They should feel Jewish. They should support the state of Israel. This is very important. And we're talking here about millions of people, not just a few people. That's what I thought the question was. It's very difficult. I just wonder, for those who want to look it up, I wrote something about this in Torah Web. This came out yesterday about this. It was at the Parsha Shavua of Kedoshim Tiyu. It's called Existing Through Holiness. That the Medrash Tanchuma understands. It doesn't say, hey, you Kedoshim. It says, Kedoshim Tiyu, which I mean, the Meisim HaKedoshim Shabach, with your holy deeds, that gives you the schus to continue. So we have to say on the one hand, as I wrote there, so many great things have happened since the events of 1948. So much more learning at Eretz Yisrael is unbelievable, more than ever before probably. And even in America, there's so much more learning. Wonderful things going on. On the other hand, the negativity, all various kinds of negative phenomena, is also, both were unimaginable in 1948. If you'd come to a Jew in 48 and say they're going to be, how many people learning Eretz Yisrael now in yeshivas? Tens and tens of thousands. Ben Gurion gave 400 guys a tour of Tzavah. I thought that's the end. 400 guys. It's only 400. It's less than the Torah count. We'll give him a tour of Tzavah and it'll be over in a few years. And he didn't realize. So he also didn't know, didn't have the power of predicting the future. He thought he was going to destroy the religion. Now there are tens and tens of thousands learning Torah with that same tour. was unimaginable in 1948. Unimaginable. At the same time, the rate of intermarriage, unimaginable. You could never have imagined it in those years, what it's come to today. And the other various changes in society which liberal Jews have accepted, unimaginable in 1948. So things have just changed so dramatically. We do our best to try to be mechazek Klal Yisrael. All
right, let's go to lunch.
Oh yeah, but is anything wrong?
I wrote an idea.
No. Again, that's why I told you.